From KUER News in Salt Lake City, this is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. At age 3, Owen Susskind vanished. That's how his family describes what happened. He was still with them, but he retreated. His motor skills diminished. His ability to process language broke down. This is Owen's father, Ron Susskind.
It's like we're looking for clues to a kidnapping. Someone kidnapped our son.
And they learned Owen had autism. But the film Roger Ross Williams has made about Owen isn't about autism. It's about how Owen sees the world, how he engaged with the world through Disney movies. Really, though, it's a coming-of-age story about how stories and fables help us all connect with the world and how hard it is to face reality. Today in the program, we're talking about Williams' film, which we're screening next week. It's called Life Animated. Join us after the news.
Take Radio West wherever you go with KUER's mobile app for Android and iPhone. Public radio is always a swipe away with KUER's mobile app, free and available for download right now in your mobile phone's app store.
This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. There's a moment in Roger Ross Williams' documentary film Life Animated where Owen Susskind explains how most of us get it wrong about people with autism. Most of us think autistic people don't want to be around others, but Owen says in the film that's wrong. Owen has autism, and he explains that autistic people want what everyone else wants. They just have to figure out a different way to connect with the world. So Roger Ross Williams' film takes Owen's point of view. We see Owen from the inside out, not the other way around. And when he was young, Owen made sense of the world through Disney animated movies, Bambi and Dumbo and The Little Mermaid and The Lion King, the older ones, the two-dimensional animated films. And that's how he connected to the world. He used these characters and these situations and stories in those films. But Williams' film is also interested in what happens when Owen starts to outgrow the fantasy world of a Disney cartoon, when reality starts to intrude. So in that sense, it's as much a coming-of-age film as anything else. Today in the program, we're talking about Life Animated, which is part of our documentary series, This Conversation. We're going to be screening the film next week, talking about it today with Roger Ross Williams, who is an Academy Award-winning documentary filmmaker. He directed and co-produced Life Animated. It premiered at this year's Sundance Film Festival. It won a directing award there. We'll give you details about the screening next week. Roger Ross Williams is joining us today, and welcome. Welcome back, I should say. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you. It's great to be back.
I want to start with, before we jump into the film, I wanted to sort of get a sense, Roger, of how this fits in the themes that you seem to be interested in. Because it seems like one of the things you've said is you like to focus on outsiders. And I guess this film fits pretty neatly into at least that idea.
Yeah. I've always felt like an outsider myself. I think many of us do. So for me, it was always about giving voice to the people who don't seem to have a voice. Whether that my first film, which was Music by Prudence, which is about a severely disabled person living in Africa, and in Africa it's considered witchcraft to be disabled, and they're cast out from society. Or in God Loves Uganda, and the alienation of the LGBT community by the religious community, and so. Owen, this was, when they started this project, Owen went to his parents. It started as a book by Ron Susskind, mm-hmm. Owen's father. And he said, people look past me. People don't see me for who I am. I'm a diamond in the rough, an unpolished gem, as Owen put it. And so I really wanted to give him a voice, and I want to give people like Owen a voice. So that's always been what's fascinated me as a filmmaker.
One of the things you've also talked about is that there's this part of the process of the film is that Owen has to sort of unlock the world in some way, find a way to interact with the world. But you also have talked about how you yourself had to sort of unlock how autism worked. And it seems like you didn't really know much about autism when you began the project.
Not a thing. Yeah. I didn't know anyone with autism. I didn't know I didn't even have a lot of knowledge about people living with autism. And so for me, it was a learning curve. And I was uncomfortable in the beginning. I was uncomfortable watching Owen sort of walking and pacing and talking to himself. And I didn't know what to make of it or how to act. And that's a journey that I wanted. And I wanted to take the audience on, because in the beginning of the film, you know, he's pacing and he's talking to himself, and you're uncomfortable as an audience watching that. Yeah. But then slowly you're bought into Owen's world, and it's this rich, beautiful world. And as you're taken into his world, you begin to identify with Owen, and you sort of, and that transformation is a beautiful thing that happened to me, yeah, and I hope happens to the audience.
But it's not a transformation for him. It's a transformation of us. Like you said, like there's that, you're seeing him pacing and muttering to himself. And then at the end, when he's doing that, we are completely comfortable with him doing that.
We're in there with him.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, Owen, in a way, what the greatest thing people say to me is that Owen is freer and his world is so much richer than ours, because Owen doesn't have that sort of wall between himself and the world. Owen expresses how he feels at all times. He's not worried about what people think of him. He can't tell a lie. He tells the truth. That's always good, rare. And so we realize that Owen and people living with autism are these sort of rich, complete, amazing people, and we wish we didn't have all the things that separate us from each other. And Owen doesn't have that.
Yeah. Well, so how did you come to the story? I mean, I know you know Ron Suskind, and some people will recognize that name. He's a Pulitzer Prize winning journalist. He's actually been on this program a couple of years ago. He approached you? Is that how it worked out?
Yeah, Ron and I knew each other. We worked together at ABC News about 15 years ago, and we just stayed in contact, and we've been friends and ever since then. And so when Ron started to write the book, he would tell me about it, and I was like, oh, yeah, okay. And then there was one moment where I was showing my last film, God Loves Uganda, at a university, and Ron is at Harvard. He teaches at Harvard, and I happened to be in Cambridge, and we had breakfast, and he told me about Disney Club, and something about Disney Club, that Owen creates this club that where they discuss these scenes from Disney movies, and it just emotionally connected with me. And I said, "Let's do this. Let's make this documentary." Within 2 weeks, I was it was Valentine's 2014, and I was at Valentine's Day dance with Owen and his girlfriend Emily filming them.
Wow. That's amazing. So can I just play a moment from the film? This is from the actually the Disney Club that Owen starts. And we'll hear in this clip, we'll hear Owen Suskind and some of the various kids in the Disney Club. They're talking about the Lion King. That's the thing they're going to screen this particular Disney Club day. Let me just play a moment of that, and I want to talk a little bit more about that. Here's a moment from Roger Ross Williams' film, Life Animated.
What was Mufasa teaching Simba? Jessica?
They're teaching us that there's more to you than you ever would see.
And there's more than meets the eye, right?
More than meets the eye.
Their parents are teaching you how, when you grow up, to be on your own and how to learn how to, live on your own.
Yeah, it's important that when our parents no longer can help us, that we have to figure things out by ourselves.
Yeah.
And this is a really important theme in the film, because, and I think that it comes through, it's like it's not directly addressed, but the importance of fables and stories. Hmm. Just to the way Owen conceives of the world, that seems like a really important idea. Just how important stories are for him to not just make sense of the world, but he has this kind of wisdom about him.
Exactly. You know, Owen is someone who grew up on a diet of myth and fable. These yeah. Disney films are classic fables that have been told for thousands of years. So Disney just takes and, you know, updates them and feeds them, you know, back to us in a different form. And so what happens is, and what these stories are what connect us as human beings. They're what you know, they're sort of our sort of like life lessons, our guides to what make us human. So Owen becomes an expert on what connects us and what makes us human. He's like a Joseph Campbell. I learned a new appreciation for Disney films, mm-hmm. but I learned so much about story from him.
Yeah.
And life.
All right. So I think one of the things is important to say before we sort of back up and talk about Owen as a kid, when his parents, Ron and his mother, Cornelia, sort of have to figure out what's happening to him, is that that's not the story that you are just interested in, just that part. Like, you didn't want to just look backwards, you've said. You wanted – that's an important part of the story, but you didn't want it to be just about that. That's what the book's about. But you wanted to move it forward. Would you say something about that?
Yeah. So, you know, I'm handed a book which takes place completely in the past. And how do you tell an interesting film about that? Because you're just going to have people telling you stories about what happened in the past. You're going to have talking heads.
Yeah.
And so, but something even more special was happening in that Owen was about to go through this very transformative year in his life. He was about to graduate from school. He had fallen in love. He was about to become independent and move on in on his own. And for me, those are big universal themes that everyone goes through in their life. And this was not a film to me about autism, as you said earlier. It's a film about – it's a coming-of-age story. Mm-hmm. And so what I – right from the beginning, I was like, this is it. I'm going to follow Owen for 1 year, this transformative year in his life. And I'm going to – and we're going to see those sort of big moments and how he deals with them, armed with the myth and fable of Disney. And when he sort of confronts all the things that we – sex and relationships. He has – how he's going to navigate that. It's, you know, like we all have to navigate it. So that was always what I wanted to do. And I flash back to how he got to where he is in sort of these sort of flashback moments in the film.
Let's talk about a couple of those. At first, Ron and Cornelia, the family, they have no idea that there's necessarily anything wrong with Owen. And then there's this video that Ron talks about. We'll hear Ron in this moment from the film and Cornelia talking about this video that they come across. And once they find it, it's a home video. They can't stop watching it. They look at it over and over and over again. Let's play this moment and we can talk about it. Another moment from the film Life Animated.
Oh, thank you. That's very chivalrous of you.
Now, in a way, it's just an unremarkable video of a dad and a son playing. I'm chasing Owen around, he's chasing me around. He's Peter Pan, I'm Captain Hook.
Oh, no!
At the time we shot it, I'm in my early 30s. I'm a reporter for the Wall Street Journal. And our life is taking shape just the way we'd want it.
We had two beautiful boys. We just had our second boy. We had a little tiny house, but it was just like our dream house.
You want to say hi to Mommy?
Hi, Mom.
Hi, God.
You know, everything was falling into place.
All of a sudden, at 3 years old, Owen vanishes.
Goodbye, Peter Pan.
Explain how they understood that, what they mean by Owen vanishes. There's a physical change going on, but he's withdrawn. He withdraws.
Yeah. Owen is about a third of people with autism are regressively autistic, meaning that around 2 and 3 years old, they become autistic. And Owen disappeared. He stopped being able to talk and have and they couldn't have a conversation with him. He withdrew into himself and stopped being able to make eye contact. Before that, Owen was a talkative, engaging kid, and so Ron describes it as like a kidnapping because Owen just disappeared before their eyes, and for young parents, that was devastating for them.
It's interesting. The doctor explained that in some cases, children sort of lose their ability to speak. And at some point, and maybe you could explain, at what point is it that they strike upon this idea of using animated movies? When did that occur to them first?
Well, Owens has an older brother, Walt. Yeah. Walt's a few years older, and Walt loves Disney animated films. And Walt kind of sort of gets Owen into watching films. So Owen would just sort of sit there in front of the television with his brother watching, and then Owen sort of started taking control of the remote control, and he started to fast forward and rewind and stop at sections, and then he uttered his first word, which was Juicervos, and they were like, what is he trying to say? And he was watching The Little Mermaid, and he actually stopped at the part where Ursula says, adjust your voice. That was a big moment because that they're like, why did he choose those words as his first words? Could he possibly be sort of really absorbing these films? And that led them, that sort of started the journey into where the family all became Disney animated characters and started speaking to him in Disney dialogue.
Owen's watching the part where Ariel, the mermaid, has to trade something to become human.
Go ahead. Make your choice. I'm a very busy woman, and I haven't got all day. It won't cost much. Just your voice.
Owen rewinds. Walt's like, Owen, just watch the movie. Owen rewinds a second time. Third time, Cornelia grabs me and says, it's not juice. I said, what? It's not juice. It's just.
Just your voice.
I grab Owen. And I say, just your voice. And he says, Juicervos. It's the first time he looks at me in a year. Of course, we read every possible meaning into the fact he picks those three words. Just your voice. Silent child. The first thing he says. He's still in there. He's still in there.
So there's this question when he's repeating those words, and they don't really know at first, because doctors tell them, look, guys, don't get too excited.
Yeah.
They don't mean anything. He's just repeating this stuff. Like, and that seems like such a big question for them. Like, is he really in there? Is there any meaning there? Like, they don't really know at that point, it seems.
Yeah. Doctors say it's echolalia, which is the repeating of words, and they sort of become depressed again because they're like, how can this be when he chose those words? And the thing continually that Ron and Cornelia do is they don't just sort of listen to what the doctors say. They are determined to connect with their son and stop at nothing and they just sort of forge ahead. And they tried every kind of therapy, but they were going to figure this out.
It's so interesting the way Ron describes it they saw it as this rescue mission. Like, we're going in.
Yeah.
We're going to get him out of there. We're going to try to rescue him. Pull him out of there, I think is how they describe it.
Yes. Yeah. And they did. Owen comes to them and he says his first sentence.
Yeah.
That is, on Walter's birthday. I don't know if you have that clip.
Can I play this moment too?
Yeah.
This is one of my favorite moments. This is like this real moment of breakthrough when Walt turns 9. Isn't it interesting how much significant stuff happens in Walter's birthdays?
I know.
Isn't that weird?
It's really weird, and we'll get to it later.
Yeah, we'll get to it later.
This big scene,
It's amazing. Well, anyway, so when he's 9 years old, Owen notices something about Walt. And what I love about it is Owen, even though he has autism, he has this kind of, he's very astute, and he has this really sophisticated observation of Owen being kind of sad, even though his party's over. And Ron explains that what happens is this, he gives the sentence, and would you just explain this moment? Because I want to go to the Iago the puppet moment, but what's significant about this moment? Because it wasn't just a sentence.
He says Walt doesn't want to grow up like Mowgli or Peter Pan, and so that was the first time that they were like, wait a minute. He's actually understanding these films. It's not echolalia. He's not just repeating them. He's actually digesting, analyzing, and understanding them and applying them to his life.
Yeah.
And they're like, this was a eureka moment for them. And then Iago happened. So
Iago. Well, this is another moment where Ron finds this way of having a real conversation with his son. Here's Ron and Owen from Life Animated.
So I go up to his room. I see Owen on the bed flipping through a Disney book. And I see, sort of over to my left, I see Iago, the puppet. Now, Iago is the evil sidekick to the villain Jafar from Aladdin. Now, I know Owen loves his puppet.
Jafar! Get a grip!
I grab the puppet, I pull it up to my elbow, and I begin to crawl across the rug as quietly as I can. And Owen turns to the puppet like he's bumping into an old friend. I say to him, Owen, how does it feel to be you?
And I said, not good, because I don't have any friends.
Now I'm under the bedspread, and I just bite down hard. I just say to myself, stay in character.
Ron does a pretty good Gilbert Gottfried impression.
Ron does a lot of great impressions.
Does he?
He's pretty good. He also does every living president.
Wow.
Yes, he's pretty good. I think it's where Owen gets his skill from, I think. Genetic.
He talks about how it's sort of at this moment where this window opens and they start to speak to him in these Disney films. And I wanted to ask, how is it that you understand how Owen interacts with the films themselves? Like, does it matter that, I mean, he has all these old VHS copies, which I'm like, well, can't they get him a DVD? But maybe that's important. Like, how does he interact with the films themselves? You know what I mean?
Yeah, VHS is important because with VHS, you can pause a film frame by frame.
Yeah.
Owen can control, and what they learn that what he's doing is he's actually studying their facial expressions. The facial expressions of these Disney animated characters are, over big and they're over exaggerated. And by studying those facial expressions, he's studying the emotion. He's studying their reaction to certain situations, and he can go frame by frame. Mm-hmm. He can fast forward. He can rewind. He can look at it over and over. And that was how he learned to communicate. It's also how he learned to read, because he taught himself to read by reading the credits over and over and pausing on a name. And I can tell you that when we have screened this film with many, many Disney animators and people who worked on Disney films, any person that comes up to him who's worked on any Disney film, he can tell you their whole resume, every
wow.
Disney film they've ever worked on and anything they've ever done, because he's like a walking IMDb.
You know what I love too, and it gets at this the way you shot him. We see him at times head on, straight ahead watching these films. And I wanted to ask you about that, because we see him emoting, we see him sort of repeating the lines, but also this facial expressions, the way he's sort of acting out these films.
He does all the voices from all the classic Disney animated films and can act out and also knows all the, does all the songs. And it is amazing how talented he is at voices. He does Gilbert much better than Ron. He does all the voices better than Ron. And he can do a scene, act out a scene, and do all and handle all the multiple voices, switching from character to character. It's phenomenal to see. But what I did there was I interviewed Owen on what's called an Interatron, which is a camera invented by Earl Morris. Yeah. It's a camera. It's basically Owen is looking at me. My image, the interviewer, on a television screen, and the camera is, let's say, behind the screen. So he's looking directly into the lens of the camera, but he's actually looking at me on its screen. Owen has spent his whole life looking at a screen, and if I had sat there and interviewed Owen face to face, he may not hold eye contact. He definitely would not hold eye contact with me, and he would be distracted. But seeing me on screen, he understands that. He understands how to interact with an image on a screen. So he is completely engaged with me, and I have him tell his own story, and I ask him questions, and then I have a little A-B switch, and I switched, and I play one of his favorite Disney scenes after a couple of questions. And what happens is that Owen interacts with that scene. He mouths the words, he does the movements, and the audience is in a sense inside the clip and inside his head. Yeah. It's this sort of great way of bringing the audience into his inner world.
Well, you've talked about this, that Owen sort of lives in his head, so he forgets about the camera, which I guess if you're a director, that's the dream. You don't want them to be aware. And so, and that's one of the things that's really unique about it. And I was trying to figure out what it is that was so kind of special about it. And it's because it's like completely genuine. He doesn't really know the camera. And that sometimes ruins it, you know? And he doesn't at all seem to be aware of that camera.
No. Owen completely, he's the perfect documentary subject. He understood, you know, once he understood, you know, he understands film. We're making a documentary, so he understood that. But then he's like, he's in his world, and when he falls asleep in his apartment for the first time, we are there with him. He completely ignores Tom Bergman, the cameraman. And when he wakes up, he opens his eyes for the first time. We're there, and he completely doesn't look at the camera. It was amazing. It was like a joy.
Roger Ross Williams is with us. He directed and co-produced the documentary film Life Animated, which you can see next Wednesday night. We're going to be screening it at the Rose Wagner Performing Arts Center. It's part of our Through the Lens series, our partnership with the Utah Film Center. Roger's going to be there with us for a Q&A after the film. And I should just mention, you're going to want to see it. So seating is going to be limited, so you should get there early. We have details about all of that on our website, radiowest.kuer.org. We'll take a quick break and be back in a moment. You're listening to Radio West on KUER. This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Today in the program, we continue our series of conversations about documentary films with the one that really touched audiences at this year's Sundance Film Festival where it premiered. It's called Life Animated. It's the story of Owen Suskind, who's autistic. For years, he stopped speaking, but his parents were determined to get him back, to pull him out of this place where he seemed to have retreated. And the film is in some ways about that way in, how they realized Owen could communicate through movies, through animated Disney movies. Again, the film is called Life Animated. We're screening it next Wednesday. Roger Ross Williams directed and co-produced the film. He's joining us today to talk about it. He'll be with us next Wednesday, by the way, so keep that in mind. Roger Ross Williams, I wanted to ask you about, there's this, it seems like one of the really important themes of the film is about the fact that of Owen having to sort of come to grips with the fact that real life is not as tidy as a Disney film. And it's one of the things, like there's this pediatrician in the film who talks about how what is appealing to Owen about these films is, you know, they're these hand-drawn figures. They have these exaggerated expressions and emotions. They're easy to interpret, but also nothing changes. And everything is everything else in his life is changing. And the question is, can he come to grips with the fact that it doesn't have a nice, tidy ending? Would you talk about that?
That was really important to me. That, you know, when Michelle Garcia Winter says life is not a Disney movie, and Owen has to come face to face with that harsh reality, and it's difficult for him. And I struggled with, you know, moments in the movie where it was sort of almost painful when Owen was trying to deal with real life. But it was Ron and Cornelia were like, you know, this is important to show it, to show everything, to show the tough times as well as the good times, and that they were all in. They said when they decided to write the book, when they decided to commit to the documentary, they were all in, warts and all. And so Owen has to deal with some very you know, adult situations, and it was essential to me that was part of the film.
There's a great moment, and I don't want to give too much away about this moment, but you know, there's a nice little love story in here, Owen and Emily, and when they have difficulty, he sort of looks for solace in Disney films, because they always work out in the Disney films.
Yeah,
but it's not working out that way, and he doesn't know what to do with it. Would you talk about that moment?
Yeah, Owen is, you know, he was so in pain when, you know, things were not going well for him in his relationship, and he constantly, I mean, you know, we see one moment in the film where he's watching a sad scene from Disney film of, but this was constant. I mean, this was a constant thing in his life where he basically would assemble all of the moments that were sad moments in Disney films, and he would watch them over and over and over all day long. And that was a way he would process his pain. And then he would sit and he would reflect on them. And it was when he would sit and reflect, it would be kind of one of the few times that Owen would actually sit down, stop pacing, stop sort of, and everything would stop, and he got really reflective. And he was really going through, you know, some difficult time processing.
Yeah. I want to ask about another really difficult time that he has to kind of try to process through some of the images that he sees in Disney films. And this is when he gets bullied as a kid. And he's really going through this incredibly difficult situation. And he calls it glop. like that's how he describes, which is a kind of a perfect word, right, for kind of the malaise that he's going through. He gets kicked out of this school, and he's this expensive school, and he has to sort of try to interact with people, and his parents don't realize this. But let me play this moment where they sort of realize that he's being picked on. He's being bullied at school. You'll hear Owen here, and Ron and Cornelia as well, and from Life Animated.
After I homeschooled Owen for a year, we got him accepted to a high school for special needs kids.
But something happens.
Owen really became very withdrawn even more, and he was very sad, and it was really a tough time.
He's so high strung, he barely can breathe.
When I would go to pick him up in the carpool line, he would dart out so fast into the car and be like, Owen, are you okay? Yeah, yeah, let's go. Ron sat him down one day and said, Owen, is everything okay? What's going on? And he said, the boys at school that are bullying me.
The bully said they were going to burn my house down and hunt me down.
These kids basically just tormented him. And because he's so literal, he literally thought that our house was going to be burned down and his parents were going to be killed.
And in that moment, I fell into darkness and walked the halls of fear.
When he said that, yeah, he just come up with these lines that were just so, beautifully expressive of what was going on.
Well, totally. And tell us what we see, if you would. I mean, we see the images of there's Bambi and Beauty and the Beast and all the really terrifying moments from these Disney movies.
It becomes a horror. Yeah. It becomes a horror film because you see sort of all of these sort of, you know, these, yes, as you said, all these horrible moments. And he would always go back to the scene in The Hunchback.
Yep.
where they're throwing the tomatoes and he's spinning around. And it's the most horrific scene. And Owen is watching this directly to the camera, and I go, and the audience is in a sense seeing, he's looking into the camera and his horror and his way he every feels the pain of what the Hunchback is going through, that he watched it, he did that over and over, and that's what he would go to. He's like, how do I express how I'm feeling at this moment? Oh, The Hunchback was bullied. He went through this, and he would just watch it, and it would way give him sort of peace. He wasn't alone in this pain.
Yeah, yeah. Because other people that he felt like he knew had gone through it too.
Were stories. You know, back to the fables. These were, yep. You know, the Hunchback. You know, as he said, in the end, he was accepted into society. Mm-hmm. He made it past it, and he took solace in that. You know, he used those fables to get him through those difficult moments.
Yeah, and he didn't get the girl.
I love
that revelation that he makes later in the film. I want to play another moment. This is really amazing. Where so he's going through this bullying, and he's. And so he kind of withdraws and he goes into the basement, as we'll hear Ron Suskind talk about. He starts drawing. And here's that moment, and we can talk about it.
After the bullying and the weeks that follow, Owen goes down to the basement. It's odd. He seems like he's working on something downstairs. I go down and I see he's been drawing. And then I sit down with the book and I start flipping pages. 100 pages of pictures. And every character is a sidekick. There are no heroes. They're all sidekicks. There are hundreds of them in Disney. Some are goofy, some are resourceful, some are wise. Merlin, Rafiki, Jiminy Cricket. They're all sidekicks.
Yeah.
So amazing, and he creates this story, and this is the thing that I think is important to say. The film is the Disney animation is critical, obviously, for him, yeah. But it wasn't the Disney animation that you used to really tell the story. I mean, there are the Disney moments that illustrate the points, but it's the animation that Owen creates, or that you create from Owen's own story, that really helps tell this. Would you talk about that?
I think, you know, this is when the viewer, the audience really is drawn in deep inside Owen's inner world, is because what happens is that Owen starts to draw and he creates this story about a boy who gets lost in the land of the lost sidekicks. He gets swept away in a storm at 3 years old. Same time when Owen was swept away into autism, and he ends up in this land of the lost sidekicks, where the sidekicks are all lost because the heroes have all fulfilled their destiny and they've left them, and they have to battle monsters, villains that correspond to the villains that Owen, the challenges that Owen has in his life, like being bullied, and this was sort of Owen's sort of autobiography, that Owen is creating. He's still writing this story. It's how his sidekicks, he says, are his advisors in life. And it's how he gets through life, by looking to them and to empower him to move forward. And so he writes and creates this world. And it was a natural for me to want to bring that world to life, mm-hmm. to want to he created the villains, he drew them, and the villain, I mean, we couldn't do the whole story because it's long, yeah. but we picked a villain, Fuzzbutch, because Fuzzbutch is a villain that makes your head fuzzy, breathes fog into your head, and you get confused, and that's very symbolic, of course, of the autism. And so this boy is in the forest with his sidekicks, and Fuzzbutch attacks and comes after them, and they have to find their inner hero and the hero within themselves and battle Fuzzbutch. And that was, to me, this was the point in the film where I wanted the audience to be 100% in there with him.
Yeah. It's so interesting that the animation is stylized. I mean, it's yeah. not Disney. It's so not yeah. Disney. No. And that was such an interesting contrast.
Yeah, well, it was important that it was not yeah. anything like Disney animation, because this was Owen's creation. This was Owen's interpretation. So right. we redrew Disney characters, but they were Owen's interpretation yeah. of Disney characters. Yeah. And for me, so what I did was I wanted it to feel so different. I went to Paris, to France, to this animation company called McGuff. And I went there because I loved what the French were doing with hand-drawn 2D animation. It felt very, I don't know, felt like European to me. It felt very yeah. different and had a different sort of, you can even use people see when they see the film. But so I worked with these young French animators who drew and created this world, led by this guy who owns a company named Philippe. None of them spoke a word of English. I spent a lot of time in Paris with them, which was tough.
Yeah, that's and rough. Yeah,
it's a rough job. Yeah. Someone's got to do it. And ate a lot of baguettes and omelets. And worked with these brilliant French animators to really bring Owen's world to life with Owen's own drawings and Owen's own story. And it was that was just, to me, that was one of the most rewarding parts of the filmmaking. Was creating this world.
And we should also point out that Disney was great with you. I mean, I'm not sure there's a creative enterprise more careful about protecting its brand than Disney, but they didn't have to be so generous, and they were amazingly generous with you, it seems.
I don't know if Disney has ever let anyone redraw their characters.
Oh, that's crazy.
And intermingle their characters. They were one of my meetings. So this all happened because Sean Bailey, who's the president of Disney Productions, he really took this on. I was introduced to Sean because he's on the board of the Sundance. He's on the board of trustees for the Sundance Film Festival, Sundance Institute, and Carrie Putnam, the CEO of the Sundance Institute, introduced us. And Sean took this on, and he said, I'm going to help you navigate through this whole process. So he put together a team of everyone, the head of marketing, the head of legal, the head of animation, all together in one room. And I had to take them on a journey through what the film was going to be and basically convince them all to sign on. And so I had shot Graduation. I had shot some scenes, and I showed them those scenes, but I took them from the beginning of the film, sort of my vision through the end. And by the end, they were in tears. And Ron always refers to it as the day I made the lawyers cry.
Right.
Because they were in, and they were like, we're not going to stand in your way, because they were like, God, we know how much of the sort of, you know, cultural landscape it is, but we didn't know it could change someone's life like this.
Yeah.
And they just were so moved. And I mean, I can't say it was an easy process. It was a long process, but I kept them involved, and we licensed the footage but it was really keeping them engaged. So they felt part of it enough to basically break all precedent and give me complete license to really redraw their stuff.
Wow. Roger Ross Williams is with us, directed and co-produced the documentary film Life Animated, which we're screening next Wednesday night at the Rose Wagner Performing Arts Center. It's part of our Through the Lens series, our partnership with the Utah Film Center. Roger's going to be with us for a Q&A after the film, and I'll just warn you, it's going to be crowded, so get there early. We have details about it on our website, radiowest.kuer.org. We'll take another quick break and come back for some final thoughts in just a moment. You're listening to Radio West on KUER. This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Back now with Roger Ross Williams. We're talking about his film Life Animated, which premiered at this year's Sundance Film Festival. We're screening it on Wednesday night. Roger's going to be there for a Q&A after the film. It's our partnership with the Utah Film Center. You can get details on our website at radiowest.kuer.org. So I love Walt as a character in the film. And a lot of this stuff, as we were sort of referencing earlier, happened at his birthday. And there's a scene in the film where, it's a really nice moment. Maybe you can say something about Walt really thinking about that. In some ways, the burden's going to be on him eventually. His parents are getting older, you know, and he's got to take care of them. And he really thinks a lot about his responsibility for Owen. Would you say something about Walt?
Walt's amazing. Walt's the really kind of emerges as the hero of the film. And Walt, Walt was the only one Owen ever drew as a hero. He would draw Ron and Cornelia as sidekicks. He would draw his other sort of relatives as sidekicks, but he would draw Walt as a hero.
Oh, that's so cool.
And Walt, and Walt always sort of felt that burden and really was honest. It was his birthday, and there was a birthday party with just the family, and Walt got emotional as he did on his birthday that long time ago. He would always get emotional on his birthday. So Walt runs away, and I ran after him with the crew, and we end up talking on this pier at their house on the lake. And Walt really, for the first time, expressed how the burden he felt as a sibling, that he was not only going to have to take care of his parents when they get older, but he was going to have to always, he had the responsibility of Owen, and that he was preparing for that his whole life. And it was an emotional moment. And as we screen the film, all across the country, siblings have stood up and said, Walt, you expressed how we feel, what we're going through. And, Walt, that was the first time Ron and Cornelia ever heard Walt say that. Or they were, so when they saw the film, was the first time they heard how Walt felt.
My mom and dad are getting older every year. 20 years from now, who knows? And it'll be just, it'll be just me. And I'll be ready. I've been getting ready my whole life, but it can kind of be overwhelming to think about the idea of taking care of them and taking care of Owen and how that's going to look. Yeah, I can keep you up at night thinking about it. And for some reason, the birthday is sometimes when it rips out of me. But most of the time I just forget about it and try not to think about it because it'll come at some point. I'm his only family he's got. And I'll have to do, whatever I have to do to make sure he's okay.
You know, there's a great scene, and it's so funny when he's trying to sort of talk to Owen, Walt is, about sex.
Yeah.
And something as innocent as like a French kiss, like talking to him about a French kiss. We don't really have a lot of time to play that scene. I'll leave it to people to see because it's terrific. But it does make you realize the burden that is going to be on Walt. And it gets to this sort of thing in the, I think this theme in the film, that in the end you do wonder, is Disney really, Disney could help you through your childhood, but he's going to have to come up with his own stories. He's going to have to move on. And it seems sad, but that's the reality that I think Owen's having to cope with.
Yeah, it was really important that it was not this film is not a happy ending, that it was like, you know, as Owen says in the end, he's like, I'm still writing my story. My yep. story is still being created. And Ron says that they used to worry about everything about Owen, but he's going to have to fall and fail, and they're okay with that. And that's really important, that those points, you know, to me, the heart of the film is who's to say what a meaningful life is?
Yep.
And that Owen is going to chart his own life, and it's going to be difficult at times. But you know, he's going to be okay. And I think he is going to be okay. And like all of us, we all have our sort of ups and downs, and we all struggle through life. And Owen is no different. And that's what I wanted to show. He's no different than all of us.
Let me ask you one quick thing, finally. What is it going to mean, do you think, that Disney doesn't make those 2D hand-drawn animation films anymore? Owen doesn't like the computer-generated ones as much. So I wondered, like, man, there's nothing new that he's going to be able to connect with in that way, so maybe he is going to have to create his own stuff, you know?
I think Owen is creating his own stuff. Yeah. He had his own gallery show recently at a gallery where he lives in Cape Cod, and he is starting to create his own original artwork that is that uses, you know, takes its cue from Disney, but is really Owen's work. And he's starting, and he's teaching art to young kids in this gallery. Wow. And he's really sort of, you know, blossoming into a young man. And I think the film and the process of going through to the festivals and being in front of audiences has really, he really bought him out. Like Ron and Kanoya, everyone is just surprised when Owen comes running down the aisle, high-fiving people as they're cheering on their feet. And he says, I feel the love in this room. And he's become the hero of his own story, of his own journey.
Roger Ross Williams directed, co-produced the documentary film Life Animated, which we're going to be screening Wednesday night at the Rose Wagner Performing Arts Center. It's part of our Through the Lens series, our partnership with the Utah Film Center. Roger's going to be with us. You should join us. Seating, though, is limited, so get there early. You can get details on our website, radiowest.kuer.org. Roger, thanks for joining us. We'll see you next Wednesday.
Thank you. Great to be here. Thanks.
Radio West, production of KUER News, the program produced by Benjamin Bombard and Elaine Clark. I'm Doug Fabrizio.